Welcome back to Zombie Nation. We're joined now on the phone by Nora Callahan, who is the executive director of the November Coalition based in Colville, Washington. Nora, thanks so much for joining us again on Zombie Nation.
Thank you for having me.
I was thinking this morning that I think in maybe some sectors of Spokane's listening audience, the November Coalition might be not an intentionally well-kept secret, but a group that not enough people know about. So can
yes,
you, can
well, we have people working all around the country, but I think it's good to recap it. What we are is a nonprofit group that founded in 1997, and we were a small group of people initially who had loved ones who had been sentenced under the mandatory drug sentencing laws and what they call sentencing guidelines. And most of our members still today are in the federal system of the federal prison system, but a lot of them are also in the state systems because the laws are about 25 years old in the federal system now, about 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we're modeled after Washington State's drug sentencing system that had started here the year before. So there was a lot of interest in our state and elsewhere because so many people in the interim, which then was about 10 years into the laws being in place, that the prison population in the country quadrupled.
Right, right.
So that's when our group formed. And what we do is to try to take people like myself, because my brother had been arrested. I had been personally affected by these laws. And to take people like myself, who were basically, most of us at the time were very isolated. We felt a lot of shame to have a loved one sent to prison on drug charges.
Mm-hmm.
But we felt their sentences weren't fair. So slowly through the years, people began to realize, well, we can leave this isolation of shame and begin to speak out. And my brother had been in prison about 7 years before the coalition formed. So I knew that we needed to cut this process down to not have people wait for years and years
right.
and finally say, well, the laws need to be changed. And the Internet played a vital role in all of that because we put a website online, and that was before many people knew how to do websites.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned it on my own. I felt really determined that this was a new method of communication and an affordable one. So between a website and a published newspaper into prisons and on the outside and distribution of that paper, we were able to be part of an emergent movement, which is now recognizable as and called the drug reform movement.
Mm-hmm. So on the surface, it looks like the November Coalition works on changing drug policy, works on issues of the drug war, but when you were on the show earlier in December, we were talking about the prison industrial complex and every aspect of the drug war, and you know this better than I do, has deep roots and tentacles that reach everywhere in society. So
yes, you can't separate what we knew early on, and this is what I'm on the show to talk about today with your visitors, is we were part of the United States Social Forum,
mm-hmm.
which are people from all over the world that gathered in Atlanta, Georgia last, oh my goodness, was that in June? I've been traveling.
Yeah.
So
Late
June, early July, yes. And so we gathered there with people from all over the world, and in part, we wanted to go there to learn about other critical issues, to
mm-hmm.
recognize and find the links to other issues. Because for years we've known that when people stand alone, the chance for victory is slim. When we can stand together and
right.
recognize our other issues as linking, then we have a better chance to defeat what we'll call the enemy. But the enemy is what?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we wanted to go. I think we went to the social forum because we knew we would find people there that know that the drug war is the main culprit behind the rapid rise of the prison industrial complex.
Right.
We also wanted to connect with people overseas who have known for years that the U.S.-inspired drug war is affecting them in their regions. And we've made the connects through the years, but to make more is always, you know, always a good thing. So that's why we were there, to learn about other people's issues and to share our issue with others who might not make the connects.
I want to focus specifically on the column that you wrote in the summer 2007 edition of your newspaper, The Razor Wire, which folks can see online at www.november.org, because I think in the column, it's volume 10, I believe, summer 2007, you make some pretty brilliant linkages between the drug war and all of the other issues that folks concerned about social justice and sustainability work on. So without reading it to the listeners, can you talk a little bit about how you see your specific work at the November Coalition tied to issues like water rights and food security and those other sort of sustainability issues that folks work on?
Yes. Well, the water connects with the drug war. Is the drug war fuels the prison expansion. And when you look at prison expansion, what we find are that we stack up human beings, a lot of them, into a very small space. And that takes extraordinary amounts of water to service a prison. And a new component of prisons over the last 20 years has been the proliferation of factories attached to prisons.
Right.
That they can put the prisoners to work for essentially no wage to do the work of private enterprise, also competing for jobs. You know, it's not all overseas. That's another aside. But the water can become contaminated. Early on, before there was an outcry, for instance, about the hazardous waste that computers generated, even in the federal system, the federal prison industries was involved with prisoners dismantling computers without any protective gear and little oversight, if any oversight, from other environmental protection agencies. And in a place called Fort Devens, they built the prisons on toxic waste dumps. Places that are slotted for EPA cleanup often have a prison come first, then the cleanup, which is suspect to begin with, because
we all know,
you know, what's under the prison and around the prison grounds, but contaminated waste. But then they have industries that are often not regulated by other authorities conducting business, and that ends up in part of the wastewater. People that are concerned with the amount of pharmaceutical drugs found in wastewater, because our bodies don't break it all down, need to be concerned with prisons, because most prisoners are medicated while they're in prison. So all of this wastewater has higher concentrations of pharmaceutical drugs than the average public has. And then with the factories attached that aren't able to be regulated, I mean, we really have to look at the wastewater coming from prisons.
And as you said yourself, we've got these human beings stacked in these human warehouses.
Yes.
We view them in the society as disposable people, and so where this prison / factory is built doesn't really matter if they have to deal with the toxics and the chemotherapeutic and pharmaceutical waste that's sort of
unsustainable human density.
Right, right.
I believe that Earth First, or one of the big environmental groups, coined that phrase early on when they looked at the issue, and we thought, yes, that's what it is. It's unsustainable human density.
Mm-hmm.
The other connects with the drug war, we found, were around food security, because we went to workshops where people were talking about in their countries the inability for the farmers and the ordinary people to own seeds, food seeds.
Right.
The drug war connects are there because the governments of the world have long contended that certain seeds and plants are illegal because they might produce, under some circumstances or some processing methods, the ability for these plants or seeds to create a psychoactive effect.
Mm-hmm.
So when the government says, well, we're going to own these, it can be as simple as like the marijuana plant being illegal, even though it doesn't kill people, it doesn't cause death, those things.
Right.
And indigenous people in the world have used that as a medicine for eons of time.
Mm-hmm.
But now governments come and say that's illegal. Opium plants, poppies that grow freely all over the world, those are illegal to possess under certain circumstances. But you can't plant a wildflower garden without them showing up because the seeds are in all the packages.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these policies that are saying that some plants and seeds are illegal for you to own. And then we have the corporate movement to own food seed.
Absolutely.
And so the connects are there because people of the world need to realize that if the governments and corporations are controlling our food and medicine, we are totally at their mercy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. When Monsanto owns the patent and the copyright on certain kinds of food grains and prevents local farmers in India or even in this country from saving seeds that they've saved in their families for generations because it works. I mean, that's where we are. We're at this mechanistic view of controlling nature.
And human beings are part of nature.
Right, right.
We're not separate. And for us to see that was really clear as they were talking about the new laws around food seeds, we realized had started around laws controlling drug plants that drugs were made from.
You're listening to Zombie Nation on KYRS. We're speaking with Nora Callahan, who is the executive director of the November Coalition, which is based up in Colville. And Nora was one of the Eastern Washington participants in the recent first ever U.S. Social Forum in Atlanta in late June and early July. In addition to those issues, water rights and food security, Nora, obviously the connections are sort of probably too obvious, but I want you to talk a little bit about them between the work you do on the drug war and drug policy and issues of gender and race and class, which were front and center at the forum from the reading that I've done. Can you talk about those connections as well?
Yes. Well, the connections with the drug war to race and class are pretty well known to a lot of people now, but I'll recap quickly. As your skin gets darker and you might be drug involved or mentioned to the police as drug involved, as a person's skin goes from white to darker, the darker the person's skin is, the more apt they are to do time in prison around drugs. And that's been fully documented now for the entire length of the drug war, which is now almost 30 years of warring mm-hmm. on people. So essentially what we have is a double standard where white middle-class people use the most amount of illegal drugs because white middle-class people are the most of the population. Next to that are the upper-class people with white skin. Yet when you look at the prison population, it's mostly black, brown people in prison. In some metropolitan areas, they have 1 out of 3 young African-American men are in prison on drug charges.
Mm-hmm. There's a line in your column in the Razor Wire, if they, meaning the powerful, the elite, wealthy few, both corporations and politicians, if they cared about our futures, would we be building cages for our youth? And I think the way you articulate that vision is a continuing theme that needs to be hit over and over again. I'm a high school teacher, and in many ways, I think the school system is a social construct that reinforces this sort of caging of young people, and so that it works very much like a prison. Not to say that it is at all in the same severity as real prisons, but it's sort of creeping down into every aspect of our society.
I think it has. It's called a commodification or codification. Uh-huh. Commodification.
Right.
We see it in clothing in our culture too.
Uh-huh.
So we
uh-huh.
see even people willingly going to the store to buy clothing that looks like prison garb.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So we have to look at all of it and wonder, you know, where are we going with this? I know that we saw schools as soon as we saw the metal detectors and lockdowns, students no longer allowed to leave the campus, no strangers allowed on the campus. We saw that as something that was indicative of where we were going, a highly controlled society.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the prison proliferation, interestingly enough, while this prison expansion turned into a prison industrial complex in just 10 years' time, By 1990, we had an identifiable industrial complex of prisons that had sprung up in 10 years. There was almost no public outcry during the period of tremendous growth. The reason why was because to be tough on criminals is sexy, and it gets people votes.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians
mm-hmm.
can get elected by saying, yeah, we're going to get tough on the criminals. What we're seeing in Spokane, it's interesting because they have oversight meetings on the police, you know, and
right.
people come out. And who are the criminals? You know, mostly it ends up being a class issue.
Exactly.
And that's
right.
where, again, back to the social forum, these policies that corporate people put into place that's going to benefit them, because we've already established that when corporate people are involved in drug crime, they're going to go to a treatment center, likely.
Right, right.
People don't seem to understand, you know, when people are consuming the drug, they're buying it. Therefore, they are part of a drug conspiracy. But these drug conspirators rarely go to prison. So when you look at the system, you have laws that they pass that they're going to be immune from, that they're likely going to find their way around and get out of. When people are poor and underprivileged in that they don't have the money to get a lawyer, they get a public defender, who, by the way, gets about 4 hours on a case.
Mm-hmm.
Public defender spends about that. The average amount is about 4.5 hours on a federal drug case. The state drug cases, it's probably even less. But at any rate, you look at 4 hours, that's nothing. That's no time to build defense against these terrible charges,
right.
often multiple charges.
Right.
So the poorer the person is, and the less means they have, the less ability they have to protect themselves from the law. Of course, those are the people that are going to end up in prison and doing more time.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're contending is, when you look at it, during this prison expansion, corporations got filthy rich. They were making money building them, no matter if the taxpayers owned them. But the other problem we had occur in our country was the private prison industries grew and profited mightily. So we saw not only the growth of tax dollar owned prisons, but tax dollar supported prisons
right,
via
right.
the private industries.
Right.
And for instance, a toilet for a prison, a Vandaproof toilet, is $1,400. One toilet.
Huh.
So the profits are just obscene and disgusting. So we had all these people getting rich, and then all the toys they use in prisons, like the tasers and drug detection machines
right.
for visitors and all these expensive electronic equipment, made other corporations rise up and become very powerful. Then when 9/11 happened, all the money around Homeland Security, scads and millions of uncounted dollars, thus far we don't even know how much dollars,
right.
has gone into policing. Not terrorists, but us.
Right, exactly.
So it's time that all that we look at issues, you know, holistically and together. When we look at the police, we're very frustrated because over-policing is also something that's come out of drug war policing.
Right.
Because the initial merger of police enforcement agencies who once had a check and balance on each other, they merged into special drug task force.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a first in our country. The police forces have always been separate. County from city, state patrol
right.
from county officers, and then we had this kind of automatic system of checks and balances because our police forces were separate.
And you've got this increasing, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but the increasing militarization of local law enforcement in the name of fighting drug trafficking, raising hysteria about gangs and gangs taking over cities. And
yes.
And I'm very grateful to you for the work that you do and the way that you make these important linkages. I just want to ask you before we have to go, if there's anything that you want to say, your sense of what you take away from the social forum in Atlanta that maybe informs the work that you do in a new way, or any last impression of your experience there as a participant.
I think that the lasting impression is that we all knew that we were going to go home and work harder to do things in our own geographical regions, which in ours, you know, is all of eastern Washington
right.
and takes in the frontier of all the way over to Montana, to take people in our position. I mean, they have they're wanting to build a 4,500-bed facility between Idaho and Washington.
Right.
When I say they, it's law enforcement inspired mostly. And that's something, when we came home, you know, we were more than ever determined that this wouldn't happen, that we wouldn't allow 4,500 citizens living in these rural areas who mostly need jobs and hope for the future.
Right, right.
To go to prison, to be warehoused in prison, that we would come home and make sure that that didn't happen. And we put up a website. It's nonewprisons.org. It's kind of a companion to November, to where people can learn more about opposing prison construction in their region.
Okay.
And protect their water and their civil rights.
Thank you so much for the work that you do, and I'm glad that with your busy travel schedule we were able to talk to you today. I want to encourage listeners to check out the work of the November Coalition at november.org. And Nora just mentioned the nonewprisons.org to understand these deep and insidious connections between these issues so that we can better equip ourselves to form a movement in this region that makes sense. Nora, thank you.
We're going to start scheduling. We'll have at least 3 meetings in Spokane this winter, so you'll be hearing from us on that.
Thank you so much, Nora. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Brad.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.